go suck a fat one.
I have an addiction to smut. I'm right-handed, but my ball sack is left-sided. Get the B-Man a double cheeseburger. Take the tip and shut up. Hello, Internet, and welcome to episode 80 of Verbal Graffiti with your host, Brian Glass, a.k.a. the B-Man, the People's Degenerate. I want to open up to, how am I going to open this? Stumble your words? Brian, yes, I want to apologize for the sound quality of episode 78 and 79, the previous two episodes. My sound engineer is a dum-dum lollipop, fired her, which might come back to bite me because she was my only DEI hire, so I might have a lawsuit on my hands. But she fucked up the sound, so I had to do what I had to do. The thing is, I'm moving things around. My soundboard is right below my leg right here. That's where I press all the buttons. I do it with my foot. Sometimes you may notice on YouTube that I'm looking down. I'm just looking to make sure my sound is on. Anyways, I had the soundboard there. I put it in my closet when I'm not filming, and I must have hit something, and just the little knob was pulled down more than where I needed to be to have an excellent sound quality. So that's why the sound was a little lower in those previous two episodes. I didn't realize till after filming. Again, but we fired her, so she's gone. All my knobs and my ball sack are in the right place. As you might recall, if you're an OG Verbal Graffiti listener, I do like having my ball sack on my left side, my left thigh. I am a left-sided ball sack guy. All right, with all that out of the way, I hope you accept my apologies. If not, go watch The Authentic Observer or any other YouTube creator. They're much more entertaining than I am. You know, I should probably talk about our current political state with the presidential election and all that, but I am filming this a little early, and I have something else on my mind. I have Bill Belichick on my mind. He's coming up on my feed, and now he's got this little doll he's dating who's, I don't know how old she is, 25, 26, and Billy with all his rings, NFL Super Bowl rings. I think he's in his 70s, but it's like a hard 70 plus years. And when you're an NFL coach that long, that grind, just in a dark room looking at tape, trying to find that advantage to get an edge on your opponent to win that game, to win the Super Bowl, to win the AFC, to get all these games. It's just up at 4:30 in the morning, in bed, 11:30 at night. You're just dark, just grinding tape. That's you're just trudging through year by year. Another birthday? Oh, great. I got to watch a receiver, his foot placement on the line. You know what I did. For all the success he has had, he's had to grind to have that success. And now I'm looking on the internet, and all I see is a slander against him. And ever since, he's embarrassing himself dating this 26-year-old. No, we will have none of that here at Verbal Graffiti. And full disclaimer, I am a New York Giants fan. I'm not a Patriots fan. I don't hate the Patriots because the Giants beat them twice in the Super Bowl. Thank you very much, Eli Manning, future Hall of Famer. I say this, I just want to put this all out of the way. That's why you grind tape. That's why you get to the top of your field. That's why you put everything aside, your family, your friends, happiness. You want the success so that you can date the babe who's 50 years younger than you when you're in your 70s. Nobody wants to fuck somebody in their 70s. That's why he's with this 25-year-old. Now, a lot of the comments are, well, what if this was your daughter? Well, I got this answer for you. Well, what if it was your daughter? What if it was my daughter? Well, your daughter's a floozy. She's going to fuck whether it's a 75-year-old multimillionaire, multi-Super Bowl winning coach, or whether it's some dumb 22-year-old in some half-ass NBA program. She's going to fuck. So she might as well fuck somebody who's well-known and who's a multimillionaire and who will set her up for life. It's just win-win. Anybody who's coming after Coach Bill or any successful man in his 70s for going out and getting himself a 25-year-old, Leonardo DiCaprio, who's leading the way. No, none of it. Here at Verbal Graffiti, we applaud those men. They're trailblazers. They're mentors to all of us. It's why I've said it over and over again. The only reason why I do stand-up comedy and Verbal Graffiti is so that when I'm old and a multimillionaire, I can slide out on my wife and go get some hottie who's not even boring yet. So, hey, there's not enough love in this world. If Bill Belichick, if he's gaga over whatever this lady's name is, good for him. Good for him. Get some Viagra. Fuck, I'm 40 years old. I'm taking Cialis. I'm not fucking. My dick still gets hard. But I'm taking Cialis just because America is, you know, we're big pharma. We're a nation of drug users. So you can either complain and bitch about it or go get yourself a prescription and be part of the party until it's all over. Because it's all going to end for all of us, except for one of us. I guess one of us might be the next coming of Jesus, but most of us are all going to die. So just go out and live it up. Have an extra drink. Have an extra pill. Have an extra scoop of ice cream. Have an extra marital affair, no matter what sex you are. And yes, when I say sex, I mean boys and girls. I know they say there's a spectrum, but come on, there's two. There's boys, girls. We're not going to get into that here because we're a comedy. We have fun here. We're not going to talk about science. Another topic that's been on my mind. Actually, this one's been on my mind for a few months now. Sometimes you hear something said that's so profound and it's just said in passing. You're, wait, can you do a whole podcast on that one sentence and not whatever, like UFC, whatever topic you're talking about or geopolitics, can you just talk? And that one sentence I hear, and it is one sentence I heard, I've been thinking about ever since, on and off. The guy said, and again, I don't remember who said it, but I'm stealing it. And I didn't research it to see if this is true, because I heard it on the internet, so it must be true. He said, and again, I guess it's an anonymous person said, since I don't remember who it was, but he said that only 5% of people think. Think about that. Only 5% of people think. That means 95% of us, we're just stealing ideas from other people. And I heard that. And when I first heard it, it was like, ooh, that's never heard that said before. And I was like, there's no way that could be true. But then I started to do some introspection, as I do as a neurotic guy. And I don't know what the word neurotic means, so I might be misusing that here. Apologies if I'm doing so. But as a neurotic guy, I started thinking about everything I've ever thought or that I can remember I've thought recently and in my past. And I have no original thoughts. Everything I say, I spew out of my mouth, anything I think, anything I process with this up here, it is stolen. It's, you know, all my jokes are original, But I have no, I'm not a profound philosopher. I haven't come up with any new theories. There's no manifesto that I've written on my bookshelf. I don't even have a bookshelf. I read textbooks, I read books, I listen to podcasts, I scroll through X. I take other people's ideas, I meld them together, like, oh, I like that, I don't like that. Let me delve a little bit more into that opinion. But there's nothing original about my thought. And if you go on YouTube now and you search, what's his name? Nietzsche. I think he might be German or Russian. He was a philosopher, I don't know, 1800s. It's in my algorithm. There are so many YouTube channels talking about Nietzsche philosophy. But you listen to these channels, none of it's original. They're just these content creators, these hack modern-day philosophers are taking Nietzsche's ideas, putting some music to it, and then they're saying it, they're just kind of repackaging and selling it to you in their own vision. But it's all, they're stealing Nietzsche's ideas, and I could shit on all these creators for doing that, but that's what I'm doing, that's what you're doing, none. And it hit me, he's like, oh yeah, maybe only 5% of people actually are original thinkers who are actually thinking or coming up with new thoughts that no one's ever thought of before, or coming up with a new, philosophy, moral compass, maybe hard sciences, how, I don't know, the speed of light melds in a certain direction and miles per hour and there's this much atmosphere in the space, you know, all that stuff I don't know about, but 5% of people do. And it does kind of, that sentence, 5% of people are original thinkers. Only 5% of people have original thoughts. Now, I may come up with a thought that I think is the first time I've ever thought it, but that does not mean it has not been thought before. All that means is I'm a dum-dum, and it took me nearly 40 years to come up with that thought that other humans, much more intelligent than me, were able to figure out thousands of years ago. What's that say? Michelangelo built the statue of David when he was 23. And like, I still don't even know. I still don't even know all the parts of the female anatomy, especially those ones. And those ones, that one. That's how stupid I am. But it is, you know, there is this other, the thing about, you know, this, stay with the B-man here. The thing about the Bible that's always amazed me is not so much the stories and what may or may not be factually accurate about when those were written, but the thing about the Bible that's always stuck with me is that we, and when I say we, I mean humans, our species, we have all the same emotions that were written in the Bible today. The seven, however many emotions it is, I think there might be 34 emotions, like happiness, sadness, anger, jealousy, I go on, you got the idea, but they're all in the Bible, and we still have them today, and there aren't any new emotions that we've unlocked in our species, and I've always found that to be very profound, and no one really ever talks about that. All those emotions, you think with all the study and all the evolution we've had as a species, that we would somehow unlock an emotion that we didn't know we had thousands of years ago when humans were prehistoric, drilling hieroglyphics in caves and going on rowboats and eating raw animals and all that. I've always found that very profound. So 5% of people are thinkers. Man, that's such a mind fuck. And it's such a terrible mind fuck too, because this is not an original mind that's being fucked. with that thought. So are you one of those 5%ers? Probably not. If you're listening to Verbal Graffiti, you're probably one of the NPCs, one of the other 95% stealing ideas from other people and trying to make enough money to get by and live a somewhat convenient life. Let's move into Reddit. So before I get so much in my head. Comes from a subreddit I visit quite often. I think we've mentioned it a few times here at Verbal Graffiti. 2X Chromosomes subreddit. I ran into an ex fling today. I'm married and feel horrible. Long story short, it was only ever a fling because he was my oldest brother's best friend. Okay. And it felt sort of off limits. Juicy. We flirted for years, and when I was 17, he was 19. I believe that is, in many states, that is statutory rape. This all seems consensual, so let's keep it going. Don't know why I mentioned that. Okay, I was 17, he was 19. He confessed his feelings for me. I felt the same. We messaged in secret for months and ended up kissing once. Juicy. I liked him a lot, and he liked me a lot, but I guess with the brother aspect, we never pursued anything. My brother moved out of our dad's house, and I stopped seeing him, and we just sort of stopped talking. We both ended up in serious relationships and having kids. I thought about him a lot over the first few years after we stopped talking. I've been with my husband now for 10 years. Poor guy. We got together pretty much right after I stopped talking to my brother's friend. I haven't thought about him in years. Really? Really? Would randomly hear about him when my brother brought him up or briefly see him with my brother as they're still friends. But I'm in love with my husband and didn't have any romantic thought about him in a very, very long time. But I ran into him today at the store. Haven't seen him in about 5 years now. I am absolutely drowning in guilt because he looked so good. We both just looked at each other in shock. We asked about each other's kids and we wished each other well, and he stared at me my whole way walking out of the store. I haven't been able to stop thinking about the interaction, or maybe about him in general, and it just feels shitty because I love my husband so much, but seeing him brought up a lot of feelings and memories. You gotta go for it. You gotta go after this guy. The feels are there. Do not push them aside down in your belly. If you do so, that's going to develop into a tumor and cancer, and you're going to die before early retirement, age 55. So what you got to do, you got to be brave. You got to tell your family, your husband, your two kids. You got to tell them you're going out to the store to get Marlboro Reds and never come back. Start a new life with this new guy. Now, that's what you need to do. Now, let me try to persuade you out the door, front door, to get that pack of cigarettes, but really your ex-fling. Now, I read this post, and I've read enough of these Reddit posts that I could read between the lines. Actually, you know what? I'm reading the actual lines of this one. You said you loved your husband twice in that post. Have you ever written a post on Reddit prior to this one talking about how much you love your current husband? No, you have not. Did you write that you love your husband in this post that's centered around your ex-fling? Did you say that you love your husband twice in that post to try to convince us, the reader, but more specifically yourself, to convince yourself that you actually do love your current husband. Yes. Yes. That's why you said you love your husband twice. You're trying to convince yourself that you love your husband and that you would never leave him for an ex-fling. You gotta leave your husband and go chase after this ex-fling. Now, I know everybody in the comments is gonna say, no, it's an ex-fling. It was what it was. It was one kiss only. It was your first and only kiss behind the garage while listening to a Fall Out Boy album. That's all it was. Leave it in the past. You have a great life. No, your life today is shit. You're with number two when you want to be with number one. Now, everybody in your life is going to tell you, don't do it. Don't do it. Why did you even bring it up to us? You married this guy. You took a vow. You have responsibilities. You have a family. You have kids. Stay with your family. Well, here at Verbal Graffiti, we say, follow your heart. Follow your heart. Even if it leaves you, you're lonely, excommunicated, in crippling debt. We say, take a shot of tequila and follow your heart. That's what you got to do. You got to go after this man. How do we do that? How do we do that? You need some more convincing, okay? Let me ask you this. As a reader of this Reddit post, has your husband, right, the man you married, right, the first man you met after your ex-fling, you ended up marrying, does this husband that you've been with for 10 years, that you have children with, that you have a family together with, has he ever made your vagina feel as intense as your ex-fling did when he merely looked at you in the grocery store? I think not. I don't think he has. I don't think your husband is giving you just that intense, the butterflies, he doesn't make you feel like a teenage girl anymore. And I don't mean that creepily. I mean just the lovey-dovey, the heart that's pounding. Your husband does not do that. Now, the more reserved people in your life on Reddit will tell you, hey, well, a flame that burns twice as bright burns half as long. And maybe it does. Maybe that's true. But they've never met this guy. They've never met your ex-fling. He has pheromones that are oozing out kerosene. So that flame might go on forever. So what you got to do is you got to walk out of your house, never come back, go find this guy. Go find this ex-fling. You can find him. Now, you tell us that, oh, you haven't thought about this guy in 10 years since you've started a new family. We all know that's bullshit. We all know you have an anonymous Facebook and Instagram account dedicated to following your ex-fling and his whereabouts and his life. So if you ran into him at a store, he's still friends with your brothers, go find him. Take his hand. Take his hand and go start a new life together, okay? Because that the way he made you feel, just by looking at you in the grocery store as you walked away, and that feeling you got from his eyes, that's your body telling you his children should be your children. You were supposed to carry his children, but you turtled. You turtled up in high school because you thought it was the right thing to do. He was your brother's friend. The dynamics were weird. So you stayed back. You turtled. But honey, you're a grown woman now, okay? You've done your time with number two, your husband, but he's really the number two guy in your life. So go find this ex-fling, all right? Grab him by the hand. Go start a new life in Toronto. The ex-fling, he can start up another insurance business there in Toronto, and you can go find a warehouse to buy on the wrong side of the tracks, and you could kind of convert it into a indie house movie theater, and on the weekends you can can laugh and reminisce and make out while listening to that same Fall Out Boy album you listened to when you kissed for the first time when he was 19 and you were 17. Young puppy love. And now, I read one, somebody told me on Reddit, because I read through some of the the replies, and they gave me the generic saying, the grass isn't always greener on the other side. Well, to that, I say, I look around, and all my neighbors have greener grass than I do. So there's probably a good chance your ex fling, he's greener than your current life is. So you got to go after him. You get one life. You got one life. Like I said in the open with Bill Belichick, he's going after a 25-year-old. He doesn't care what anybody else in the media thinks. Now, you're not even famous. So to drop your husband, some people will chat, will talk shit behind your back at the local watering hole. Who cares? Who cares? They're at the watering hole. You're in love in Toronto, building a new life with the guy you should have had offspring with originally. Be a woman. Leave your husband. Or you did your time. This is like the military, right? You served, you enlisted. You served your time. You deserve a medal. Now it's time to get out and live the life you really want to live. Good for you. Good for you. Go find your ex. We're rooting for you here at Verbal Graffiti. Let's go look at some photos. Hey, B-Man, we've noticed you suspiciously have not been mentioning the Yankees of late. Why is that? I'm glad you asked. The reason being, the B-Man, Brian Glass, I am a front runner. And once my team gives up 5 unearned runs in a World Series inning, I cease to talk about them. So the Yankees, goodbye. It was a fun run. We gave it our worst effort, but we'll be back in 2025, going after championship number 28. My other teams are the New York Knicks and New York Giants, so not much sports to talk about till pitchers and catchers come mid-February, I believe. There is another topic I want to broach, but that first segment went long, so I'll just take a moment to plead with all of you, please like, subscribe, hit all those buttons down below on your screen that help us build this project that is Verbal Graffiti. Remember to share a segment or an episode or a podcast of Verbal Graffiti with all of your mortal enemies and a teacher who failed you and made you go to summer school and any uncle or aunt or teacher or guardian figure that may have molested you when you were a young toddler. Get back at them the only way you really can, by giving them a filthy episode of Verbal Graffiti. With that awkward begging out of the way, let's get into another segment I found on Reddit. This comes from the subreddit Name Nerds. Help me pick a stripper name. Sure. So I got hired at a club and am super excited to start, but I need help with name ideas. You came to the right place. Helpful info. I am a petite woman with mocha skin and big curly afro on your head. My vibe is a blend of ethereal, sweet, and feral, often adorned with lots of gold body jewelry, lots of baby goddess energy. The only one I've found that I like so far is Bambi. Would love some other suggestions. Right off the bat, I'm going to tell you, do not go with Bambi. I've never seen the movie Bambi because my parents would not allow me to do so. My mom does not like sad movies. So a lot of those sad Disney movies from the 80s and 90s and early 2000s, I really don't know what happened with them. But with Bambi, I do know. Bambi was... See, if you go with a stripper named Bambi, you don't want to be associated as a stripper with a character that got shot in the hind leg, was bloody all over, and the sadness. You don't want to be associated with that. And plus, no heterosexual male or lesbo wants to fuck a deer. I think that's true, yeah? So don't name yourself after a deer, because as a stripper, you want your johns to want to pay you money to do that to you. So you don't want to do that. You know, you talked about being the mocha skin, and I cannot lie. As soon as I read that you have mocha skin, it made me think of the word mulatto. Now, I know, I have been made aware of this, that the word mulatto is a slur. If you do not know, mulatto is, it was an old term used to describe somebody who is like African-American and European. So if you're kind of half black, half white European, you were called a mulatto. But it's kind of used as a slur, especially in modern times. And when I say modern times, I mean, I don't know, the last 100 years or so. But when the first time I heard the word mulatto, and it was late in life because I did grow up in a mostly a white Irish Catholic neighborhood. First time I heard the word mulatto, it made me think of a cookie. And am I wrong when I say that mulatto sounds like the name of a cookie, or at least it should be? Like if someone's like, hey, would you like a mulatto? You're like, yeah, I would love to have a mulatto. And, you know, maybe it's because I adore black and white cookies. It's one of my favorites. So technically, if you think about it, if you take a black and white cookie and you take a bite out of it takes both the part of the white and part of the black, as you're crunching it in your mouth, chewing it together, the black and white cookie does kind of become a mulatto, right? Half black, half white. So maybe we should start calling the black and white cookie the mulatto cookie. Again, but hey, I know I might be the only person who hears the word mulatto and thinks, oh, that should be a cookie, not a racial slur. I don't even know if I'm allowed to say that word on the internet. So I'm not going to bleep it out, because that's a thought I've had for quite a long time now. Mulatto, cookie. Yeah, love a mulatto. I've never used the word mulatto as a slur word towards, you know, someone who's from African American and European descent. I just love black and white cookies. I got that New York Jew in me. I don't know what that is. You know, this brings up this whole asking what your name should be as a stripper. I have to confess, I do have a dear friend, one of my best friends I've had for a very long time. There was a period in his life when he dated an ex-stripper. So while they were dating, she was not stripping, but she had done some stripping before. My best friend and her had met and started dating. And I like her a lot now. She's no longer in his life. But I did like when they dated. She was a fun hang. She liked to drink. She'd go out with us. She had a great personality. The one regret I have about the two of them dating is that I never asked her what her stripper name was. I know what her real in the street name is, and I'm not going to say what her real name is here, because I don't know if she wants to be associated with this pervy verbal graffiti project. But I never asked her what her stage name was. And now that I think about it, I never asked my best friend, one of my best friends. So I got to ask him after this, what if he remembers what her stripper name was, or if he even asked her. Because if I do date a stripper, I've never dated a stripper. I would like to at some point in my life. And if I do date a stripper, I am going to call her by her stripper name in the bedroom, of course. When we're out in public, I'll use her street name. But when we get behind closed doors, poll or no poll, I am going to call her by her stripper name. That was a tangent writer. So what should your name be? First of all, what was that phrase you used? You used the phrase, lots of baby goddess energy. No idea what that means. No idea what that means. I've heard of big dick energy, but baby goddess energy sounds like the name of a shot that you'd take at a P. Diddy freak off. So hopefully you're not associated with him. I don't know what baby goddess energy is, but I do not want it grinding at me during a lap dance. So I try to get rid of that energy. But all the other terms, you know, I read the way you describe yourself, and it reads like so many Hinge profiles that I read. Yes, to be man, I'm back on Hinge, getting no matches. I think I've been on it again for almost 2 months now, and I've gotten one match. She messaged me a couple times and just kind of ghosted me. But anyways, this is about you. Well, with so many of these Hinge profiles, the problem is the lady will give you in her profile more. It's one run-on sentence that includes more adjectives than verbs and nouns combined. And so I walk away after reading your profile knowing less about you than I did not even knowing who you were before I saw the profile. Same thing with this Reddit post. You list off a bunch of adjectives. It's like, great, I have no idea. All I know about you is that your mocha skin, so I'm assuming you're light skin black. You have an afro, so you're probably proud of your heritage. And you like to wear a lot of gaudy gold jewelry over your body. Now, when I picture that, like a very proud black person with a lot of gold jewelry, the first person that comes to my mind, the B-man's mind, is Mr. T. And that's what I think. I think you, as a stripper, should be the female version of Mr. T. So your stage name while stripping should be Miss T. I think it's great. You're the female version of Mr. T. You're Miss T. It's a fun name. Everyone knows it's a fake name, but you can play along with it. You can kind of go up to the guy at the bar, be like, hey, buddy, would you like a cup of tea? And then you can kind of play off that. And I think it's a cute, sexy name. So, yeah, Miss T, that is your stripper name. You're welcome. But you should know, as a stripper, you're going to need a second name because the Johns who go to strip clubs are very persistent. So they'll know that Miss T is your stage name. So they're going to ask you during the lap dance or maybe while you're doing some other funny business with them, or sexual business, I should say. They're going to ask you what your real name is, like what your street name is. And you need to come up with a fake name for that because you need to have a buffer. So you need to have the stage name, the fake real name, and then the real name. So your fake real name, I say go with Vanessa. Every Vanessa I've ever met or seen on TV is a dime piece. She's usually not white, but she's super hot and she's down for fun. I'll tell you this. If you told me I could go on a vacation to Aruba with a lady, a babe, and her name's Vanessa, and you told me nothing else about her, I'd go on a vacation. Because every Vanessa I know is a dime piece and a floozy. So fuck yeah, I want to be in Aruba with her. So use Vanessa as your fake real name, Miss T as your main stage name. You're welcome. Now, the only thing else you have to do now is you have to learn how to walk in stilettos, dance on the pole, and learn how to put on a condom with your lips. Hopefully, you'll learn how to do all those very quickly within the first few shifts stripping. Let's get to our final segment of the evening. We're going to continue reading The Salesman's Wife by the great John Lawrence, published date 1977. We are starting chapter 2, page 27. And as always, we read two pages. Chapter 2. At a little past 2, the taxi left her in front of a large brick mansion that stood surrounded by woods at the end of a long, winding drive. The old house looked somewhat forbidding to the young wife as she walked up to the stone stairs to the front door. She was dressed conservatively in a pale rose blouse and skirt, yet her voluptuous body was still well revealed by the snug garments. Timidly, she rang the bell and waited for someone to answer. Presently, the door was opened by a tall, striking woman dressed in a tight black sheath dress and high heels. Her body was svelte and her bosom thrust out like two bee-stung globes. She had raven black hair that pulled back tightly in a knot and a beautiful, commanding face with dark, heavily lashed eyes and full scarlet lips. A huge pearl necklace adorned her throat. "Yes," she said in a low, melodious voice. "Can I help you?" I'm Pamela Burns." "Oh, yes, we spoke on the phone. Come in, won't you? The doctor's waiting for you." She ushered Pamela inside, and the nervous wife found herself in a dark hallway, dimly lit with a Tiffany shade lamps hanging from the high vaulted ceiling. There were wide sliding doors closed on either side of the hall and a carpeted stairway that led to the floor above. At the end of the hallway, just behind the stairs, was another door that Pamela guessed must have led to the kitchen. I'm Mavis Carlsberg," the tall woman said as she closed the door. "The doctor's wife. Follow me, won't you?" She led the way upstairs to another hallway with several doors on either side. "It's a huge old house," Mavis said as they walked, "but it's just perfect for my husband's work." She stopped in front of the door at the very end of the hallway and opened it. "Go right in," she said, gesturing Pamela with her hand. "The doctor will be with you in a moment." As the door closed behind her, Pamela found herself inside a huge, high-ceiling room furnished in a plush, stainless chair and couches. The walls were wood-paneled like the halls, and the room was softly lit with more multicolored low-hanging lamps. The strange colors and the twisting, bizarre designs of the glass gave the room an eerie feeling, and Pamela shivered slightly. She noticed a low couch near one wall, upholstered in lavender velvet, the reminder of her psychiatrist's couches she had seen in the movies. Go suck a fat one.